Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. I'm your host, Tim Reed. And once again, I'm so excited to be here today. Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast. Now, today's episode is an absolute treat, and it was one that I had been trying to nail down for quite a while, and it is with none other than Alan Murphy, the president of Blaze King. Now, to give a little bit of background on this, we cover this a little bit in our upcoming conversation. I had never sold Blaze King as a retailer, but I'd heard about it for years from my friend Grant Falco, because he had been selling Blaze King for quite a while up in Spokane, Washington. And he had told me a lot about Chris Neufeld and Alan Murphy, the vice president and president of Blaze King. And I'd met Chris and talked to him through various government affairs things that we were a part of, but I'd never met Alan. I just heard about him. And so a couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to go out to New Brunswick, Canada for the Compact Appliances Dealer Show. And Alan was there. And one of the nights after the show, we had a get together with a number of the manufacturers and folks who were vendors at this event. And I got to spend some one-on-one time with Alan. And it was absolutely amazing. We talked about leadership. We talked about his journey as an immigrant coming to Canada with a young family, bootstrapping his career and how it evolved and took off. And we talked a lot about product innovation and expertise. One of the things that I found as I go to do, you know, consulting work with various retailers is that oftentimes Blaze King comes up because they have created and stuck with an incredible niche in the market that has allowed them to not be distracted by the shiny objects everywhere else. And their dedication to doing what they're best at on repeat is pretty incredible. So with that said, we recorded an interview that covers a lot. I mean, it covers Alan's story and career. It gets into personal discipline and habits. It gets into how to lead and manage people. And there is a lot here. So I'm going to jump out of the way so you can hear this conversation, and we'll circle back at the end and I'll share a few parting thoughts. Joining me from Victoria, British Columbia is the president of Blaze King. I'm here today with Alan Murphy. Alan, how you doing?
I'm good, Tim. How are you?
I'm great. Man, I'm excited that we got to do this. I feel like ever since I met you a few years ago, I've wanted to have you on the podcast for hearing about your story and your journey, and I'm glad that we're able to make it happen. So yeah, thanks.
Good. Glad to be here.
So I heard about you, Alan, from Grant Falco for a long time, and I heard about Blaze King and Alan Murphy and Chris Neufeld, and I had never met you until I think it would have been 3 years ago at the Compact Trade Show, and we were at an after-hours event together, and I just enjoyed the conversation, and it was amazing hearing about your journey and even coming to North America as an immigrant. And for folks who aren't familiar with your story, can you talk about what you do now and then rewind to talk about your career path to get there? Because it's pretty incredible.
Sure. Well, currently today, I'm what's termed head of the hearth division for a company called Decisive Dividend. Decisive is the parent company that owns Blaze King. And why I'm hearth division head is because we now own a second company in England, in Birmingham, and they're called ACR, and they're in the hearth business as well. And hopefully over the next number of years, we'll have more companies to add to our umbrella. But that's where I currently am today. But my main task is as president of Blaze King, for sure.
Yeah. Now you don't just get hired off the street as the president of Blaze King, right? There's got to be a path to get there. What was your path getting into the industry?
Well, I grew up in Dublin, Ireland, and in the late 80s, the economic environment was very difficult. It was challenging. Interest rates were spiking at 18, 19, 20%. I was in the printing industry, and it went into free fall. It spiraled in amongst itself as an old trade industry that got completely decimated by new technology, computerization. And so it just forced me, my wife, my family to, what are we doing? We're working 2-3 jobs, 14-hour days, and going backwards. So one time my wife said, well, do you want to emigrate? And I said, don't be stupid. Well, 2 years later, guess where I was? In the great North American continent.
So. Wow. Okay, so just to rewind back on this, because I remember you sharing this with me, that it used to be a really good business, and then it was just like bit by bit by bit, it continued.
Yeah, so what happened was we had several arms in our business, a plate making section, a typesetting section, and a short run full color printing section. And it started with the typesetting, where pre-Apple Macintosh, just as an example, there were 60 typesetting houses in Dublin. When Apple Macintosh, 2 years after Apple Macintosh arrived, there were 2.
Wow.
So that'll give you an impression of how quickly the industry transformed from a very high trades-focused industry to a very computer-focused, very low-skill set industry.
Wow.
And that happened overnight.
Yeah. And at this point, so you're a grown adult, family, kids.
Yeah, 3 children, yeah. 3 small kids, yeah. A 1-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 6-year-old.
Yeah. So, yeah. So where did your wife get this idea to come to North America?
So she had family who lived in Canada. So okay. We were able to join them. And when you emigrate, that's where you go. Where's the bed? Okay. That's where we're going. Right.
Wow.
So that was it. That's how we started. And then you start to make a new career for yourself. And Patricia, my wife, looked after the family while I went out and made a career.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I want to circle back and talk about that. I feel like that experience had to have shaped your career. But when you came to Canada and you're staying with family, how did you end up in the hearth industry?
I knocked on doors looking at printing companies because that was my background. I got a job selling printing in Victoria, and one of the customers I managed to bring on board was Sherwood Industries, as in Enviro.
Oh, yeah.
And having done business with them for, I don't know, about 9 months, I got a call one day, say, hey, come on down. So, yeah. And then I was, I believe, 17 years, 16 or 17 years with them after that. So I must have done something right to hang in there for 16 or 17 years.
Yeah. Oh,
and
that's
it was
awesome.
A great experience. They were a great company to work with. Just fantastic. Yeah.
And how long have you been with Blaze King now?
2011.
Yeah.
This is when I joined Blaze King. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So you went from literally sleeping on the couches and floors of your wife's family to now running this large company. How did that experience as an immigrant and kind of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, how does that shape what you do now?
Well, 2 things. One is my wife was fantastic. She just looked after all the family. So I didn't have to worry about that. I had to worry about getting out and getting a career. Mm-hmm. And when you're an immigrant, you lose all fear. I can do that. Sure. Don't care. There's nobody looking at you saying, ooh, look what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, you just do whatever you have to do. And you work inordinately crazy, stupid hours because you need to make it. You need to prove yourself in a new country. Nobody's standing aside saying, oh, here's a great guy. Come in and have it. There are other people out there competing. But when you have nothing to lose, it makes you very powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and also I was fortunate that I was able to just meet some great people on the way. That helped a lot.
That makes a ton of sense. I mean, I feel like I've heard this about negotiation, that whoever cares the least about the outcome of the negotiation has
all of the
power.
Much more powerful.
And
here's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to do that. That's okay.
Yeah.
Because
you're not
afraid.
Because you're not afraid of what happens if it doesn't go through. And
correct.
And that's interesting about being an immigrant made you just lose the fear, where it's like, I don't care how I look.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to do this.
Yeah. There's no social constraints whatsoever, because you're in a new country. You're almost speaking a new language, not quite,
yeah.
but there's a lot of nuances that are different. And so it allows you to explore things that you may not have otherwise done if you stayed at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So that's the mentality that you have had. What have been some of the keys to leading people that you've kind of learned over your tenure in the industry?
Well, first off, you need to understand people. So like when I got my job in Sherwood, the first thing I did was spend 2 weeks down on the shop floor building stoves. You've got to get in and understand what the roots of the business are. Like I had no idea what a pellet stove was. I'd never seen one in my life before.
Right? Yeah.
So how do you learn? Well, put on your steel-toed shoes. They were borrowed. They were too big for me. Coveralls, they were borrowed. They were too big for me. And down on the shop floor, assembling pellet stoves. And that gives you a base understanding of what it is you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I always say I'm a lousy salesman, but I understand my product and I'm passionate about my product.
Hmm.
And people read that passion and that understanding. And it makes you a great salesman because it means you're telling the truth. So
yeah.
it's something I've always tried to do. And then the other main thing is getting out and meeting people. There is no substitute for being out there and listening to your customers and hearing what's going on firsthand. Not by Zoom, not by phone calls, certainly not by email.
Yeah.
although they have their place in the structure, but getting out and listening and watching is of critical importance for sure.
Yeah. That's really good. I love that about understanding people. I think that what's hard is as you take on more and more responsibility, it often separates you from the ground level work that's being mm-hmm. done. But the ground level work that's being done is where the knowledge base is
yeah.
for solving problems. So for you, you know, you live in Canada and Blaze King has two plants, one actually, you know, a few hours down the road from me in Walla Walla, Washington.
Yep.
And then the other one on your side of the border. How do you stay in touch with what's happening at the production level to be able to solve problems when you've got geography and barriers of people and hierarchy and everything in between?
It's all about communication. It's we have a saying in-house, no surprises. So I talk with my senior managers every single day of the week, sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. They in turn talk with their managers mm-hmm. every day of the week, sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. And the conversations can be as banal and mundane as, oh yeah, we moved the van over to the other side of the parking lot because, you know, some of the employees were complaining they couldn't get their cars in properly. But through that intimate form of communication, there's nothing that suddenly jumps out at you and goes, oh my God, how did this happen?
Yeah.
You've seen it coming all along. And by talking through the situations, you prevent 99% of them. Obviously, there are things that happen that you have no control over. But most things you can control that way.
Yeah. So I guess on that same note with people, I feel like I've heard Grant say this, like one of the hardest things as a leader is to hold people accountable and also inspire them at the same time. How, mm-hmm. how do you balance that of like setting clear expectations where there is accountability, but also making sure people feel confident and inspired, like you're rooting for them?
So the accountability is easy. Here's what I want. Right? Do you think it's reasonable? Okay, good. And can I have it on this day? Right? And things will happen in between. I don't think I've ever seen a project go on the day I said it was going to go on.
Yeah.
Ever. Right? So here's what I want. And do you agree that we can do this? And so what do you need? It's not a you got to deliver. That's never the conversation we have. I said, here's where we'd like to go. Here's how I think we can go. What do you think? You know, and then you get the, well, we have no idea what we're doing there. So that's not going to happen in that time frame. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
What do we need to make that happen? Do you need more people? Do you need more resources? Do you need more time? What do you need? And let's do a roadmap. So the accountability is the roadmap. And it changes. Those goalposts move all over the place. They never stay the same, right? And so the accountability then comes, and the leadership accountability in my eyes is one, in that the daily conversation, how's it going?
Yeah.
What happened today? Did you get that done? Oh, okay, no problem. Did you? Yes, you did. Okay, what was the result? Yeah. So you get again, there's no surprises. It's not coming back to me in 2 months' time, project end, saying, oh, by the way, that didn't work. That's not the way the system goes. The system goes by daily communication. Yeah. And it's when you surround yourself with good people, they want to communicate like that too, because the last thing in the world they want is not to deliver. People love to deliver. They want to do well. They want to achieve. They want to have recognition. Everybody does. And so it's how we build people up for success.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Something that came to mind as you were talking there when it comes to people is when you dictate, hey, this is what I want done. I'd like it done by this time. I feel like a lot of folks want not just the result, but they want it done their way. And oftentimes when you want to dictate both how it's done and what happens, that means that you have to jump in to micromanage. And that may not be bad depending on the project. How do you balance the expectations of, hey, I want this done, but I'm going to trust you to do it the way that you see fit as an expert?
Sometimes you have to let people dig the hole.
Yeah.
Right. And you're watching it and the hole is, we're still digging it. But in your own mind, you have it already factored in that, from your experience, it's not going to work. Like, it can be as something like production planning or whatever. You know, you go down to the guys on the floor, the factory floor, and say, what do you think? And some of the ideas are wonderful because they're the people doing the job.
Yeah.
They have a great knowledge of what they're doing. And then one or two ideas would be, okay. But you got to let people learn, right?
Yeah.
And then they come back shortly afterwards. It never takes very long and say, that didn't work out how I thought it was going to work out. You say, no problem. We got to try these things.
Yeah.
But the engagement is very important. That it's any change or any project that is grassroots based will have much longer legs than one that comes from on top coming down.
Yeah.
So if you can engage people in grassroots level to be a participant in anything we're doing, that usually has much, much stronger foundation. It doesn't mean the vision isn't there. You know, I have it in my mind what our company I would like it to look like. And so I have the vision, but the actual mechanics of making it work, 99.9% of that comes from the people on the ground floor. Who do the job? Yeah,
yeah. It's funny when you talked about how you give people room to operate, and sometimes they dig the hole. I had a friend that I used to work with, and someone asked him about how it was working for me, and he goes, "Oh, working for Tim? He'll give you enough rope to either hang yourself or find your way out. It's up to you."
yeah. But that's it. You know, people learn, people grow, and if you get everything right, I don't think you grow. You have to make mistakes to grow.
Yeah.
And we all make mistakes, me included.
Yeah.
And one of the things I always foster is the openness with all my people is to stand up and say, no. And here's why. We shouldn't do this because X, Y, Z. And I'm the first person to go, okay. I didn't think.
So that's a really good point. I feel like too, the more that you take on with responsibility and the higher, status or whatever you become as a leader, the less truth tellers you find in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you intentionally seek it out, how do you create environments where you can have truth tellers saying, I don't think that's the right idea. I think we should do this instead.
You can never have any fear in amongst your people. They've got to trust implicitly that you respect them and they've got to respect you. And if any one of my people stand up and say, this is not right. And then I challenge them, of course.
Yeah.
And they challenge me.
Yep.
It's a two-way street. It's not a one-way street. And they're able to say, okay, I'm listening. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Or, okay, this makes sense. But if it doesn't make sense, I'll question myself that, am I hearing what they're trying to tell me? And I'll usually bring other people into the mix to say, am I missing something here? Or you know, can everybody help me?
Yeah.
And then it usually works out that there's either a valid concern or it's, no, it's a roadblock. Let's just go around it. Let's
move. Yeah. That's good. It's funny, as you were talking, something came to mind that I hadn't even thought about just until this conversation. But from my perspective, I feel like Blaze King has carved out just more and more of this like growing niche in our industry, right? So wood burning is already a niche of our industry. You know, gas is so dominant, and within wood, we have, you know, catalytic products, non-catalytic products, hybrid products, all the above. But it seems as though like Blaze King has found what they are phenomenal at and has just continued to stay in the lane and just get a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And for me, like, and I say this all the time when I'm out visiting retailers and stuff, is like, oftentimes Blaze King ends up being a product that I recommend, not because I think you're great, even though I do think you're great, but because as I objectively look at what it offers, it solves a problem that many other people haven't been interested in solving the same way. And I'm just really curious, how has Blaze King avoided the temptation to be all things to all people and continue to just hone that thing that you're good at?
Well, we are great at doing what we do, but you're right. It's a very narrow field, and it ain't broke, don't fix it. It works. And we've been able to adapt the technology to different size fireboxes, different designs, whether it's cast iron or steel. And moving forward in the future, we'll have some zero clearance fireplaces coming. And we're working on some European style products as well as our first partnership with our English company.
Yeah.
But the basic formula we have within our technology has been evolving over the years, so that we have our secret sauce in the combustors, we have our secret sauce in our thermostats and the airflow and the pathways, and it works. And it works, and our message is very clear as to what we do. And I think that's really important, is that we have a deep understanding of what we do, and we do it well. So that understanding stops us from, well, maybe we should do a hybrid, or maybe we should do a more reasonably priced secondary air stove, or that's not our business.
Yeah.
So keep focused on your main business. And it doesn't mean that we don't try new things. We try new things all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but keep your focus on what you're doing.
Yeah. As you said that, it reminded me of a quote by Jim Collins in one of his business books. He has this concept he calls preserve the core, stimulate progress.
That's right.
So preserve the core of what you're doing and then stimulate progress on the peripherals, but preserve the core. And I think that there's something so wise to that. It seems like that's what you guys have been doing.
Yeah, and that's what we've done all along. Like, our technology is not new. We've been massaging it for 45 years. Mm-hmm. Right. But that's one of the good things too, is we've been massaging it for 45 years. So I think we should know what we're doing. Right. And it also, with the change towards more catalytic combustion technology, it gave us that, gave the retailers a sense of confidence.
Yeah.
Here's a company that's been doing it for 45 years. God, you know, if we have to go down this road, let's pick the ones who know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that for sure. So we've talked about managing people. I'd like to end today talking about managing yourself. So for folks who are listening, whether you work at a retail company, distributor, sales rep, manufacturer, I think one of the hardest things to do is manage yourself, especially if you're the owner or the head manager of your company. How do you manage yourself? I mean, I know that obviously there's a parent company that you're held accountable to, but how do you manage yourself to get the most important things done?
Yeah, it's tough to do, because people in leadership roles are passionate. They're consumed, right? So how do you take a step back and smell the roses? It's not easy because you're passionate and you're consumed, and it's all personal. I think the hard part is making sure that you spend time with family. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a lot of time, but I think if I had any advice to someone, it's when you're there, be present, be engaged, 100% focused on family. If you're at home and on your phone and on the computer, you're not at home. You might as well go to the office, right? So if you have the most important thing you can do is when you decide, okay, this is family time, put the phone away. Be the person who's looking after their family. And even an hour of quality time is worth 5 hours of you back and forward on your phone and ignoring what people are telling you. So if I have any advice to anyone, it's be present.
Yeah.
And actually the same thing goes for meetings and work. Be present.
Yeah.
Be focused.
What I'm curious of is, you know, you work with a parent company and they have expectations.
Yes.
And you have people underneath you that have expectations. And your parent company is publicly traded. So how do you manage the pressure of short-term performance with long-term gain and benefit?
That's where I am so fortunate to be part of the Decisive Group. They are wonderful managers. I was afraid when Blaziken was originally sold to a finance house, because let's face it, the experience in our industry has not been terribly good, right? And ever since they purchased us, I also became a shareholder at that time, so I was fortunate to do that. But there's no egos in there. They're great people to work with. They say, hey, Alan, here's what we'd like to see. What do you need? Do you need money? You need people? Do you need buildings? What would you like? You're the one who's running the business. You come back to us with your vision. Here's what we'd like the growth curve to look like, because we're business. We're here to make money. Okay.
Yeah.
But in that growth curve, you tell me what your vision is, what the product lineup will look like, what the financing will look like, what the number of employees will look like. And so they, and again, communication. I talk to them probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a week. So there's no surprises. Again, it's the same philosophy, goes up and down. And then I'll be explaining what's going on, and they'll say, well, did you think of this? Yeah, we did, because da, da, da. Did you think of that? Yeah. Did you think of the other? Oh, no, that's a good point. And there's a fantastic team of incredibly experienced business people who have been around the block. And so if there's a financial concern, I have people to call on. If there's a regulatory concern, I have people to call on, if there's whatever. And they are engaged and engaging.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing going up the chain as it is going down the chain. And, you know, if we all want to grow, and if growth doesn't happen, it's not a big stick. It's a no surprises, and here's the reasons why. Oh, okay. Yeah. How do we get out of it? How do we move forward? What do we need to do? How can we help you?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that comes across from the parent company all the time. Every conversation is, how can I help you? What can I do for you?
Yeah.
You know, and that comes down to them being confident in their presidents. We have 11 companies now.
Yeah.
We're over 500 employees. So it's growing, but all the presidents, they are very confident in, because they've picked good people for those roles.
Yeah.
And so, yes, they're challenging. Of course they are, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm challenging. So, yeah.
That, I think that's a great leadership principle, though, is, and it maybe goes back to the accountability and inspiring, that when you can have someone on your team and you can say, I'd like this to happen. What do you need?
What do you need?
Do you need my time? Do you need someone else to help you? Do you need training? Do you need money? And that's inspiring to the person, that it shows confidence in that person, like you were saying, to think they're going to invest all this in me. But now, like, at least for me, I know I can already feel like I've got no excuses now. I've got to do this thing. I can't make the excuse of I didn't have the money. I didn't have the people. I got to perform.
Yeah. And we all have bosses, whether it's the bank manager or your customers whatever it happens to be. This is just a different kind of customer. In my eyes, it's just a different kind of customer. And I present them with my vision of where I'd like to go. And so we are aligned. We're going in the same direction. And then they're very, very supportive. And they're just wonderful to deal with. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Can't say enough good things.
Well, Alan, this has been really, really good. Like I said, I've been wanting to have you on for a while. Ever since we met at the Compaq show a few years ago, I've just been fascinated by you. And I've loved just being able to kind of sit and just glean just wisdom as we've talked leadership and stuff. So it's cool to have this conversation on the podcast. I really appreciate you being here. And I'm hoping that before this year's over, we get to hang out in person. So good to see you, man.
Love to. Okay, Tim, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Alan Murphy. And I mean, what an amazing guy. He is someone that I just love to spend time with. I mean, it doesn't hurt that he has an incredible Irish accent. I feel like he just immediately sounds intelligent because of that. But he is someone that I think has some true wisdom. And there's a lot in this conversation to take away. One of the things that really impacted me is, as he was talking about leadership, how much the key of it is understanding people. It really is. In so many ways, it doesn't matter how good you are at the things that you do. It doesn't matter what your incredible vision is. If we don't understand the people who are around us, what's important to them, and how we can help them, we're never going to push anything across the finish line. Leadership really does hang on our ability to understand and relate to people. On a similar note, I thought it was really interesting when we were talking about how to get things done and how to make vision a reality. Alan talked about how, yes, there are times where you can put down an edict and you can make things happen, but where the most success comes in is through a grassroots effort, where the best ideas come from the people who are working for you. Because when the ideas come from there and you believe in it and you empower it, there is a natural buy-in that happens because it's no longer the idea that's being championed from above. It's coming from the people. And I've seen this, you know, even with my interactions with companies and clients over the years, is that when ideas come from the mountaintop and they're heralded with a trumpet from on high, the idea might be really, really good, but oftentimes the people who are going to be executing it have reservations about it, maybe because they feel threatened, maybe because there's some reason that they don't like it or they don't want to change. But regardless of the reasons, it's a fact that oftentimes ideas from above or from the outside have undue resistance. But ideas that come from the people get buy-in. And I would say, as a leader, being able to have your ideas come from your people is a way for incredible things to happen. And I don't think this means manipulation, but it does mean setting an intentional environment and pouring into people so much that your influence and your fingerprints can be seen in the work that they do. You know, it's the whole model of a teacher and a student. When a student learns under a teacher and the student eventually starts to become a teacher, the work that they do bears the fingerprints of the people who taught them. And I think that this is the same sort of thing. You know, finally, I thought his answer on accountability was so good when he's just like, yeah, accountability is easy. It's, this is what I want by this date. And in so many ways, we lose sight of that. I mean, I know for myself, there have been times with people I've worked with in the past where I have not set clear expectations. And if I don't set clear expectations, it's no wonder that I can't hold people accountable to it. But the times in my life when I can say, hey, this is what I want, this is when I want it by, let me know how I can help you deliver it. It is amazing how it becomes easy to hold it accountable. Accountability is about expectations. As a business leader, you likely have all kinds of expectations in your head, and it's easy to get frustrated when people don't live up to those. I get that. But if we have not clearly communicated those expectations people in no way are able to rise to that occasion. And when you think about expectations and accountability, there has to be a cadence of regular communication. It was so good when he talked about, he said it a couple times, no surprises, right? It's okay if things get off track. It's okay if we struggle to meet this goal, or even if a deadline gets pushed back, but no surprises. I found this in my own business as we meet weekly to go over our quarterly objectives and goals. What it does is it eliminates surprises so that when things get off course and go wrong, we can see it a mile ahead and we can course correct as needed. Well, I hope you guys got as much value out of that conversation with Alan as I did. It was an absolute pleasure. Now, hey, if this podcast has been a blessing for you and you want to support it financially, you can do that by going to the website patreon.com/itsfiretime. That's patreon.com/itsfiretime. My hope for you as you go out this week is that you can think about some of the things that Alan talked about. At the very least, accountability and expectations. When you want something done, tell your people, hey, this is what I want by this date. How can I help you deliver that? If you can make that a practice, it's amazing how you're able to hold things accountable and work starts to get done. Hope you guys have an amazing rest of the week. Thank you for listening to the Fire Time Podcast. To learn more, visit the website itsfiretime.com. Music from this episode was written and recorded by In Bloom out of Portland, Oregon. We thank you for listening to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. We'll see you next time. All into buying.